So, hi and welcome to Prepared, the German gear podcast. And you hear and you can listen to it that my voice is shaky as fuck because I'm sitting here with the engineer, artist, inventor, tactical Jedi, as I call him, designer, businessman, and most important, father, Patrick York Ma from Prometheus Design Works. Thank you very much for being on the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good, Eric. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the flattering words. It's great to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, thank you very much. So just for you out there, for your folks to know, it's very unusual. I just, you know, sent it to you a text message or a DM, a slide in your DMs on Instagram, and you responded. And I'm just happy that I can talk with you because I'm using your product and I'm just following your path the way I could, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very proud that you take your time and that you share your time with us. I just saw on Instagram that you've been out in the woods on the weekend. And yes. How dare you? Can you sell this as winter camping with this amazing weather you had down there?
Yeah, that's some of the advantages of living in the area that we do. It's fairly temperate and it's not a big temperature spread. 50s to the high 60s for most of the year. I mean, it's very pleasant. Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of fog, of course, in the Bay Area. It's very, very,
I see.
Very moody and atmospheric. It's we really love the fog. And then we have our beautiful sunny days. And the weekend, last weekend, when we went backpacking, the weather was terrific. Right. It was high 60s. I'm speaking in Fahrenheit. 6 degrees Fahrenheit, not Celsius. The sun was shining. We were hiking in shorts. It was terrific. And it's February. Yeah, it's unusual. Usually warm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. But interesting that you say, because, you know, most of the people, well, if you have fog or, you know, me personally, I like it too. It's the normal, if it's the autumn weather here, when you have the fogs and you have the colored leaves and stuff like that. So I'm really into fog and I like it very much. So here at the moment, it is getting pretty cool again or pretty cold again. We had like on Monday, I needed to, you know, scratch my windows from my car free from ice and was like, oh, what the fuck? But still okay.
What part of Germany are you in?
I live in the northern part, so near, close to Hamburg. I don't know if you know, but you have been to Germany or you know at least something about it?
I know a little about, I have not been to Germany, but I have a pretty good understanding of where some cities are and the weather. You have the, you know, Bavaria in the south, of course, and you have Hamburg in the north, and you have Cologne, and you have, you know, some of those other cities. So I'm pretty familiar.
I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed with American. If I say like Hamburg, they say it's like, is it close to Berlin? Yeah, it's kind of close to Berlin. So, but that's it. Yeah. So it's very okay. You need to come here. You're invited. No problem at all. Tell my wife, and she will support my request. Okay. So you need to have some beer here. So since you're living in the Bay Area, just because when we had our like first date, but we missed it. It was a Super Bowl weekend. Are you into Super Bowl or are you into football or not that much?
I'm not really into football per se. I have very little time to watch sports on television.
Yeah, I see.
If there is a team sports to pick, I prefer baseball. My kids play baseball, league, and they have a lot of fun, and it teaches them good sportsmanship, teamwork, team dynamics, playing in a competitive venue, and that's very, I think, beneficial for them for learning. But I think there's so many other better things you can do with your time than watching sports. I'd rather be hiking, climbing, backpacking, yes. you know, spending time in the wilderness than watching a sports on television, you know?
I totally understand and I get it. So I used to play American football myself back then in military college. So that's why I'm still interested in, and it's always fun to talk, but you say something very wise because, you know, sitting there and enjoying sport. Well, I kind of understand it. It's sometimes, you know, like coming together with friends, having something to eat and to drink, and it's totally fine. But what you say is, of course, you can do better things. And as you said before, you're always busy. So, but talking about wilderness, because this is, I think, so what I, you know, learned about you or about the companies you invented, coming from being the outsider, you know, being the outsider, that's also your claim on Instagram. And you grew up in the Adirondack area. Is that right? In New York, state of New York.
Actually, you know, it's interesting. I was actually born in Belgium.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. So I spent the first 3.5 years of my life in Brussels. I moved briefly to Taipei, Taiwan for 6 months. And then I came to the United States when I was four. I was 4 years old, and I came to the United States.
Yeah.
But once I was in the U.S., I spent most of my childhood on the East Coast, in the Adirondacks Mountains, which is in the state of New York, and the foothills of the Appalachia, which is in the state of Pennsylvania. So I grew up in the forest. I was in the forest, in the mountains. That was my childhood from 4 to 13.
Very cool. Speaking about it, so why have you been like all over the world? It sounds like military bread, but
no, that's the most common assumption. Yeah. But actually, it's just my father and mother were always moving for different job offers. They always got job offers, so we pick up and move. I lived in 6 states. I went to like 3 or 4 junior high schools. I went to 3 or 4 high schools. I was always the new kid. I was always the new kid in school. So,
Okay. When you say you've been outside all day, did you had like a mentor? Did you had like a brother or always had friends like you've been outside with? Or, you know, sometimes you need someone to just, you know, get you outside or tell you or, you know,
That's a great question. Well, you know, growing up in the mountains, it was our natural state of being. We were just outside all the time. I was always very interested in learning the skills to be able to survive in the mountains. So I would go to the library and get a lot of books and read about witchcraft, read about how to survive with a tarp, making a lean-to, making shelters with branches and, you know, things of that nature. But my first real mentor that showed me or got me to understand the differences in the industry, because in the U.S. now, the outdoor industry is split into two categories, what we would consider cast and blast, which is in reference to casting a reel for fishing, and blast is hunting. And then the core outdoor industry, which is backpacking, rock climbing, kayaking, mountain sports. So those are the two primary categories of outdoor activities in the United States relative to the marketplace. And this mentor showed me, because I grew up around hunting and fishing. That's what I grew up outdoor activities. But my mentor, I met him when I was about 11, 12 years old. He was a teacher of mine in school in upstate New York. And he used to cross-country ski the school in the wintertime. He was an old school mountaineer. He was quite a character. He'd always wear sweaters with holes in them. And he was always like half, never quite shaven and always had a scraggly beard. But he taught the mountaineering class in my school.
Oh, cool.
So showed you how to do basic rope work, how to rappel, how to climb, You know, and he showed me cross country skiing, you know, and backpacking. Backpacking was the great big jumping off point for me, like to be able to go and camp, but with everything on your back, right? So that really instilled in me the idea of self-sufficiency, self-reliance. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no car, there was no RV, there was no camper. It was just you and the equipment that you chose to carry on your back. So that really was fascinating to me. And from there on out, that since I've been 12 or 13, I've been backpacking my whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is quite interesting. In Germany, just to give you an impression, there are in my opinion, like this going out and going, because the land is not, it is pretty big, but it's not as big as in the United States. You know, if you go outside, most of the woods, they belong to someone. It's not allowed to camp free and stuff like that. So it's always, so what you call hiking in German is Wandern, and it's often associated with going to the Alps and, you know, into the mountains. And okay, it's kind of like old guys and you know, it has like the flavor of very, let's say just old, you know. And so the thing, you know, my experience in backpacking is, of course, with the military background, you know, carrying everything, but the sink in your backpack and just hating it all the time. But when you finally get back home into the barracks, you know, you can, and you go to the next to the next party, you can tell the girls that you are a good infantry guy, you know, and hopefully they say like, oh, that, well, but in the end, it's not, we felt like it, you know?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So, back to you. Now you just said it, and was, you know, as a kid or being young, at least for me, it was, you know, like equipment is a thing, you know, you wanted to, like, if you watch Indiana Jones, you wanted, my grandfather, he wore like hats, you know, like real hats. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I need to have one of his hats, because I want to be Indiana Jones, because I couldn't afford like a leather jacket or something like that, but at least the hat or something like that. Same with the Rambo knife. Same, you know, there are some just iconic things you just, you know, wanted to have and to enjoy it outside. Was it the same with you, or was equipment just something you needed to have?
I have been a fan of gear my entire life. It's something I think I was just born with. I remember getting my first pocket knife from my father when I was about maybe 7 or 8 years old. It's just like a little slip joint pocket knife. I had like a little blade, a nail file, and a pair of scissors. He got it at the airport on the business trip, and he gave it to my brother and I. Mm-hmm. And I was, I was like, this is great. This is fantastic. I loved it. You know, and from there on out, you know, I began to, you know, look at the tools and the knives and, you know, any camping store I could go to, any hardware store I could go to, you know, and then I used to, you know, look at a lot of, you know, outdoor and gun magazines, right? And then the gun magazine back in the day used to have all these advertisements in the back where you can write for catalogs to look at the equipment. So I would write these places and get all these catalogs to review, you know, get anything from pocket knives to tents, to guns, to backpacks, clothing, you know, and my mother, she sewed my brother and I. My mother was very crafty, you know, she would always make things and sew things. And she sewed my brother and I work jackets like that we could wear at home.
Oh, nice.
And I remember just thinking, God, this is great, but maybe if I ask my mother, she can sew bigger pockets so I can fit the surplus army canteens in them, you know. So that began perhaps the inkling, the idea that, you know, you can modify equipment, you can modify things to your liking. But I'll tell you the big turning point for me in terms of understanding that you didn't have to accept things that were off the shelf, the things that you just buy in stock, that you could change things to modify them to suit your personal taste, was when I was a young man, and some girls I met brought me to a store in San Francisco that made leather jackets, custom leather jackets. I'm like, I was blown away. I was like, wow, I can get a jacket made to fit me exactly. I could pick the styling. I could pick how many pockets. I could pick the zippers, the leather, the color, the leather weight, the liner, all different aspects. I could totally pick and choose. And yeah, that to me was a light bulb went off. That was an epiphany. I was like, you can still do this in this day and age. You can still get things totally tailored and made to you. And as a young man, I think I was 19 at the time. That to me was, you know, really just mind blown. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know those things existed at that point. And I think from there, it really gave rise to what I felt then was possible. It opened the doors in my mind to let me know that you could make things if you really wanted to and not have to rely on someone else's idea, you know, something that was off the shelf. If you truly wanted a custom, you could get it done. And like you, I'm also former infantry as well. And I remember in 1984, and I'm getting my equipment. And 1984, so I'm older, but the equipment that I was receiving was stamped from 1972. And I was like, I cannot believe the equipment I'm receiving today in 1984 is left over from the Vietnam War. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So that in itself too also taught me that, would let me know. And even at that point, I had been backpacking for years and all of my backpacking equipment was so much more comfortable and superior in many ways to typical Army issue gear. So that also gave me a basis from which to start thinking, what can I do to improve the equipment that certain groups use, like the military? And utilize the things that you can learn from the outdoor industry and apply them in a more martial or tactical context. So I was always thinking about ways to improve things, to make them better, how to make them improve efficiency, weight, use a technology that was so much more advanced in the outdoor industry than what it was that we were getting in the Army at the time.
Wow, but this is quite interesting. I didn't know you've spent time in the Army, so hoo-ha, this is really great, and lucky that you're an infantry guy. This is always cool. So, but this was the time before the Ellis equipment, or you just didn't receive the new stuff, or
this is the early Ellis era. So it's all Ellis equipment.
Ah, okay.
So you had the clips, Ellis gear, Ellis pack, old school waist belt. I'll be right back. Someone's buzzing my door. I'll be right back. Excuse me.
Yeah. Just go ahead. he's leaving now, but it's just great to talk with him. Just to give you an information, he's sitting in his living room, and it seems like he has a bear in the background, like a teddy bear. And I'm just turning around a little bit. I hope it's the postman who's coming. We will see how I get. Yeah, here you are. Talked about the bear. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of wildlife. You know, I grew up with animals. You know, I've worked a lot in wildlife conservation projects, which is, again, great time for me to experience time in the field. But I'm doing something really important to me, you know, wildlife conservation, you know, and it was adventure with a purpose. So I've been doing that for many, many years. So, my kids know that I really like animals. So they typically get me gifts that are animal related. So they got that for my youngest got me this for my birthday.
Nice. But, very nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's fortunate for me to have been able to experience, this variety of, outdoor, adventures and journeys and projects and missions. You know, my most recent ventures were into the Gulf of Mexico, Baja, Sea of Cortez, where I was scuba diving and removing poacher's net. So we were removing damaging poacher's nets and net
Hi.
That, work. So this is Wolf.
Hey, well, I'm sorry you can't see me. Wait a minute. I just turn around that you can see me a little bit.
So this is Eric from Germany. We're talking to someone in Germany right now.
Hi, nice to meet you.
So say, wie geht's? Yeah, wie geht's?
Hello.
Was ist los? What's up? In Germany.
Very nice. Very nice. So okay. You need to prepare lunch or something, so just go ahead.
So those are some trips that I really am proud of, to have been able to spend time doing these things. And we were battling cartels that were selling the, you know, illegal animal parts, to black markets. But we did that for a number of years, but it got a little too dangerous. Working against the cartels, they started to really, threaten us. So we had to finally stop our operation.
Yeah, but this is really something I appreciate, and that I think it's like the best way to enjoy outdoors, making something useful out of it, and not leaving trash or something like that, like all the idiots do, but something. And so, as nice as it could be, and I've been several times, I've been this year in Mexico for a short time because I'm working there, and I'm always enjoyed being there, but still, there's a risk. That's why I'm working there, and you got to be really careful. So thank you for your service, sir.
Likewise.
But this is really cool. Okay. So, but let's go back to your life, because I think army for an inspired mind like you are can be very frustrating, I think. And I'm quite sure. Especially when it comes to gear and you need to, and it's nothing about it is comfortable, but your first sergeant says that you have to put your pocket right where your pocket is and stuff like that, or the pouches must be like this and there. Going out of the army, and this is the interesting thing, when you started your first company, and I hope we can talk about it, just because it is you went away, just tell me if it's not okay, but tell me if I'm wrong, but the first company you went into was the Triple Alt Design.
That's
that
correct,
right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. I am the founder of that company.
Yes.
And that brand, and I did all of the product design for the time I was the CEO there. I was the CEO there from 1997 to 2012 or 2013. After that, I left. But for those years, it was a very fascinating time, creating the equipment that I was creating. And I did it to appeal to the general adventure type person.
Yeah.
But the customers that first picked up on it, that first actually really understood and saw what it was I was trying to do, were all special operations members. They're the ones that first picked up on it. And they're the ones that helped me really, they carried the brand for the entire time I was there. It was their needs that I was tailoring and designing the equipment for. They obviously could wear more, they had more latitude, they had
freedom,
opportunities to freedom, exactly, to utilize the equipment that they wanted. And they didn't want the issues, the general issue stuff. It was heavy, clunky, just not as technically we're performance oriented as outdoor equipment, which is the basis from which all of my equipment was being made. Anything from creating a backpack that wasn't just a box with towels on it. I had an interesting shape. It was ergonomic. And that pack is very popular and still popular to this day and all its iterations that brand is still doing. It was a really just very productive time in being able to produce all the soft shells, the fleece jackets, of which today, honestly, every single brand has kind of copied, if I may say so.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because nowadays, when I And I was, I think it was like back in like 2003, something like that. It always comes a little bit later to Germany and to Europe, and it was very hard to get this, mm-hmm. this gear. But until this day, if you see a Softgel jacket, it's, in my opinion, it's based on exactly this design, like yes. with this high zippers and the cut and like be, and this is so interesting. And now tell me, this is a question I wanted to ask. So do you think that the PCU system was based on your designs? Like, do you know the PCU, the old like 20,000 PCU system?
Yeah, I do. You know, it would be hard to say, and I wouldn't certainly be boastful and make that claim that the PCU system was based on any of my ideas. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make that claim per se, but there's certainly some very close similarities to the systems. Yeah. And maybe it's just it's one of those world instances, you know, like you know, the scientists in America and the scientists in Italy sort of inventing, you know, the radio or the light bulb or something at the same time. I can't remember exactly the historical details, but you know, there are a lot of very smart minds in this planet. And I would not be surprised if people in just the normal evolution of thought, the evolution of product design, arrived at the same conclusions at the same times, but in different places.
Okay, you're very humble, but it makes you even more interesting. So, yeah, but you know, I just thought, and I in my mind. So, just for you, from my perspective, that back then, what was interesting for me, you know, coming from the military, I always wanted to. I was kind of happy with the, because I wanted to use like surplus stuff. When I was a kid, I had like, I'm from East Germany, so I had the old Strichtarn pants from my uncle and stuff like that, or the old Strichtarn jackets and stuff like that. And of course I would prefer to have like the woodland stuff, but I only had this one, but it was comfortable and I liked it. And so I was looking for what to wear in civilian life. But if you wear like camo pants, then you are, you know, you go in a special direction, and with your clothes and with the pants back then, you know, you had like the cargo pockets, but it did look like cargo pockets, and it was more like a sporty, like it looked a little bit tactical. Not everyone had it on, and it was like really cool, like having it. And this was, from my perspective, the interesting part. Yeah, and that's why. And this was my way into, or like into this kind of gear. So you know, moving on, then you needed to leave, or you left your, let's say, baby, the first company, and you got another one, like with Prometheus.
So, you know,
one door closes, the other one opens. Yeah,
exactly. You know, in the world of business, sometimes you choose to bring on new people that don't always work out. You see things differently. And, you know, I brought on some new partners who were, just very different minded people. And, you know, I was at that point, we just, you know, we couldn't agree on much. And, you know, my second child was coming, and I felt it would be a good time to take some time and enjoy my new babies. You know, and leave the arguing and the dispute behind, you know, me, and I can always start something new, start fresh. You know, unfortunately, just this past year, those new owners, they ran Triple Lot Design, into the ground to, about, I think they got $9 million in debt. So they almost had to close. Yeah. They almost had to close down, but they sold. They had they sold the property to a new owner, and the new owner has that brand Tag Gear now. And I think they're going to try and save it. So you know, it's still going to be around. But with PDW, that allowed me to start fresh, start new, take many of my core design sensibilities, and start branching out and expanding into new directions that I really wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. So I've been very fortunate and lucky to do that. you know, just explore new ways of designing, but still very much my style. I mean, as a designer, I'm doing my job correctly and I'm doing my job well when people can recognize my work, no matter what brand I'm doing, but they recognize it. You know what? That's something that Patrick Ma designed. And that's a point of pride. I admit that. But it also means that I'm staying true to my design sensibilities and I'm staying true to my design ethos. And that's important to me.
Yeah, I totally understand this. And the thing is, right now with PDW, you have such a huge range of things, you know, from the tiniest titanium screw to Schachmacks or to chemis to watches or collaborations with watches. You still use have jackets and also so. And this is one question, you know, like how can you be proficient in all these different kinds of like different companies? You know, there's one that makes knives and tools. There's one which is good in clothing and stuff like that. So how do you manage it to get like a high quality of good gear with your design stamp on it?
Oh goodness. That's a great question, Eric. You know, I think ultimately when I design something, I do it for somewhat selfish reasons. You know, I design a product and I design something that I want to use, that I want to
How
wear.
How cool is that?
You know, so that's why my brands represent a wide breadth of goods, because those goods represent categories that all interest me. You know, I love EDC. You know, I mean, I started EDC around 2001, 2002 with the first few titanium pocket tools. So I was there at the very beginning. You know, and I think I helped usher in the whole movement of EDC. I won't say I invented it. I didn't do that, but I think I fueled the interest with creating some of the very first titanium pocket tools. And I just love the idea of having small, simple, really smartly designed, useful objects.
Yeah.
And of course, the clothing, you know, just finding things that I think are more efficient. You know, better design, more ergonomic, better, you know, easier to put your hands in your pockets, easier to access the things that you put in your pockets, closures.
Yes.
And of course, backpacks. I love backpacks. I've been a big fan of backpacks as I can remember.
Oh, tell me about it. Tell me about it. So I'm like addicted and sometimes I don't, you know, I see a backpack and I really, you know, I don't want to, in German, we have a saying like, don't put honey around your beard if you say something sweet to one, you know, but yeah, but I love the shadow pack still is my, I wear it to work every day and it's, and every time, and still I have it for like, let's say 2-3 years now, you know, and I wear it every day and still every day when I pack it, it's just, I enjoy it, looking at it, feeling it, and having it on my back. So this is something which makes a good product, you know, just have it in your hands and enjoy it like every day. And it's not, you know, I don't want a new one of this one. I just like it the way it is. So so this makes your job like really cool, like enjoying, of course, all of this. What would you say are the biggest problems, especially in like manufacturing things and in the quality of making good things? Still there is in Germany, it's the same, like made in Germany is something very useful. Made in USA is something, you know, some brands take pride of, but sometimes it's not the best product just because it was made here. So how do you tackle this situation? If I may ask you this.
No, that's a fantastic question. And I think so many people aren't really necessarily aware of all the nuances that require someone like me in my market space and my business to handle and deal with. And thank you for wearing that shadow packet. That's great. I'm very happy to hear that it's doing its job and that you're enjoying it. So when it comes to manufacturing, back in the late 90s when I started, there were still quite a few factories in the United States. And being in the San Francisco Bay Area, I was very lucky to be here because some of the most well-known American outdoor brands all started right here in the Bay Area. Yeah. The North Face at Bay yeah. Area. Sierra Designs, Bay Area. Mountain Hardware,
yes.
Bay Area. All these different yes. brands started right here. So the infrastructure was here to support that. But at the same time, in the late 90s, many, many jobs for production started moving offshore because labor yeah. was cheaper. It was more affordable. And of course, the big companies like the North Face moved a lot of their production offshore. So I was here getting yeah. started, and there was all these factories with room. They had no, they lost a lot of their business. So they were ready and open to work with someone new like myself. So I was very lucky to be here at the right place
yeah, okay.
at the right time. So fast forward, you know, it's 23 years later, 24 years later, more and more American factories have shut down. It is yeah. getting increasingly more difficult to manufacture here in the United States. But there, you know, that's not to say there have been, you know, some improvement in manufacturing as well. I mean, some new factories open up, so they're still around. But by and large, in the Bay Area, especially, you know, all the sewers are getting old, you know, and there's yeah. all the pattern makers, the marker people that print the patterns, they're all retiring. They're all getting old. Yeah. So it's very difficult to find anybody young to replace that yeah. workforce. So as yes. they retire and age out, these factories close up. So at this point in time, you know, we still utilize some factories in the Bay Area to produce some of our clothes.
Yeah.
But we've certainly had to expand our manufacturing to other places in the world. And again, at the end yes. of the day, it's my responsibility to produce the best quality product I can for the best value. Yes. And if that means if it's a pair of pants made here in the Bay Area, or you know, a down jacket made in China, or a backpack made in Vietnam, mm-hmm. it's my most important responsibility to make sure that I can deliver the best goods for the end consumer, no matter where it's made. And there are excellent things made in the United States. There are really yeah. crappy things, shitty things made in the United States. Same thing.
I see.
There is excellent things made in China, crappy things made in China. You know, yeah. it you have to work with the right factory. Apple products are made in China. Mm-hmm. Toastings are excellent. Some of the most amazing cars now are made in China. the entirety of the best backpacks made today for mountaineering, core outdoor sports, mm-hmm. They're all made in Vietnam. And yeah, again, it's the diaspora of manufacturing, if you will. And the diaspora meaning that the spread of peoples, you know, across the world. So are you familiar with the American brand Osprey backpacks?
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. They used to be made in Santa Cruz, a little beach town I used to live in California. They used to be made in yeah. Santa Cruz. Yeah, and they moved to Colorado, and then they made the big move back in the late 90s and early 2000s to go to Vietnam. They chose yes. to try to establish a foothold in Vietnam to produce backpacks. And once they were there, they pretty much opened the doors wide open for other yeah. U.S. brands to follow. And what's little known is all of the factories that sew core outdoor goods from backpacks to clothing yes. in Vietnam, they're all owned and managed by South Koreans. The okay. local labor, the local labor force is Vietnamese, but they're all managed by South Koreans, which are technically advanced, very business-minded, very, very efficient. And they're able mm-hmm. to, they brought their entire business mindset to the Vietnamese economy. And they really opened up that country to fantastic quality manufacturing in the core outdoor business. So it's probably one of the top places in the world now to produce outdoor goods. So yeah.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So yeah. I just have a small anecdote. So what kind of opened my eyes, because in Germany, it's pretty hard to find like decent t-shirts. And there are some brands which are like very, very expensive and Rungspun and all this stuff, all this fancy
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I've been in Vietnam for work reasons and just went to a market and saw, mm-hmm. you know, the cheap t-shirts there. But I had them in my hand and they have been like sewn perfectly. And of course, because it was like produced there. And I was like, mm-hmm. what the hell is going on? Of course, you know, you always have to think about like, you know, how the workers are doing and stuff like that. And, you know, but think about what you can buy in Primark or whatever. So, but the thing is, the quality was there and perhaps it is a clever, or it should be a clever move to go where the quality is, because it doesn't make sense if you just have the American flag, but you don't have the workforce or even the knowledge behind it, how to produce like good things, or the German flag, it's like the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very, very true. I visited Vietnam, to tour mm-hmm. the factories in 2009. Right. Now that was already, you know, wow. You know, 15 years ago. And when yeah, I went yeah. to go visit, you know, I was very impressed with the way the yeah. factories were run. Everybody had a nice uniform. Everybody had a good work coat. Everybody had a computer yes. station. And in terms of when it's, you know, cutting fabric for backpacks or clothing, everything, even in 2009, everything was being laser cut, even back then. Very oh, okay. precise tolerances. Mm-hmm. They were
yes.
15, probably at least 15 to 10 years ahead of anything in the United States. They were advanced. They were embracing technology, which is why the quality is so good. The tolerances for laser cut goods is far superior to the old school way, which is still done in the United States with basically a giant jigsaw. It's, you know, yeah, a manual yeah. saw that's still cutting.
Yeah,
the fabric yeah, here,
I and understand.
it's good, but it's not as precise as laser. When you cut with a laser, yeah. the cut at the top is the same as the cut at the bottom of a stack of fabric.
Everything, that's not true. Everything is better with laser, yeah. of course.
Everything yeah. is better. You know, when they were placing things in sewing machines, it was all laser mark. Yeah. You knew exactly where to place all your pieces to sew. Mm-hmm. Very, very impressed. And, you know, and to this day, they just make sure they keep up on all the technology. It's the latest and greatest machines, sewing machines, laser yeah. machines. Yeah. So, cause that's their economy. That's what they do. That's what their focus is. And they're very, very good at it.
Yes. Very cool.
Yeah.
Talking about material, and this yes. is my last question, and then I've prepared a little quiz for you. I hope you're okay. prepared.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Just for your information. So, I just like put myself now a little bit into the light, because I might or might not have stolen some of your designs for my design. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, okay, just make like, it out. Yes. Yeah. A little yeah. triangle.
So,
yeah.
I of course I didn't steal it, but perhaps I just took a pretty close look to your design, to just your logo. Okay.
Okay.
But my question, material relating, because I'm feeling, you know, of course, when I was in the army, synthetic was the thing, like having yes. like Under Armour stuff, big of also playing football, like Under Armour stuff was cool. When it was really cold, I preferred to wear like, don't know the brand, like Brynje. It's like the netting underwear. It's only like netting. Mm-hmm. But what was not popular was like wool or natural materials at all. Mm. And I feel this is coming back a little bit. And I see it also in shirts you produce. I'm also like a big fan in like the fills and stuff, because it's like so rugged and, you know, with the wool thing. So what do you think about these like old school materials? Like when you have all this fancy stuff, what do you think about it?
So I am a big, big fan of merino wool. And
yeah.
The first time I saw an opportunity to try to utilize merino wool in my designs was fairly early on. I think it was 2006, 2007. under my old brand, I introduced Merino base layers, Merino sweaters, mid layers, you know, neck gaiters, accessories. Because I grew up under the an interesting time when there was no Gore-Tex, you know, it didn't exist yet. And there was nothing, polyester fleece did not exist. There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
So I grew up, you know, if you wanted to survive in the wilderness, you had to wear wool.
Yeah.
That's what you had to wear. You know, cottons absorb water, cotton made you cold and get you hypothermic. So you wanted to wear wool. So of course, fast forward.
Cotton is rotten. Yes, it is.
Yeah. 2007, you know, merino wool is very soft. So I was already picking up on the cues from the cross-country ski industry, which was oftentimes Nordic or Scandinavian in origin. And merino was a softer wool. It's significantly softer than old school wools from the 70s. Softer.
And this is what I still have in mind, like this scratchy old pullover my mom made me wear when I was a kid. And it was like hell, you know, it was itchy. It was, but nowadays, you know, And nowadays you have like the wool and you feel it, how perfect it is. So,
it's terrific, you know, to have the quality of wool available these days. It makes clothing so much more comfortable. But also, it's certainly more ecologically sound. It's certainly more environmentally conscious, which I support. You know, the technology behind modern outdoor clothing, anything that's made from nylon, the polyester, it is entirely petroleum-based. Everything that is synthetic is petroleum-based. And while it does create some wonderfully technical, super high performance apparel, as well as nylons and fabrics for backpacks, at what point will we run out of petroleum? And not on our generation, but maybe two or three generations from now. How are you going to make nylon when you don't have oil, when you don't have petroleum? Now, that's kind of a rhetorical question for myself, but we are seeking ways to produce a lot of bioplastics now with corn. So I think there is a future in plastics and synthetics per se, but it will be made from, corn, straw, cellulose,
bamboo,
all those different fibers will be made from natural sources. And it's how we position ourselves to use what materials for what end purpose. Like, here's a great example.
Yeah.
The diesel motor. The diesel motor was invented to run on vegetable oil. That was the original idea behind diesel. And it wasn't until it got absorbed by the petroleum industry that the petroleum said, well, no, let's have a petroleum that mimics the vegetable oil to produce diesel that we want to sell to the consumer. So we, as the petroleum company, we have the business locked in. Okay. So that's a side story, but, it's relevant to how we think about how we use natural resources. So merino wool, I'm a big fan of it. You know, I still make merino beanies. We knit those here in the United States. We make merino sweater, beautiful merino sweaters in Italy. I'll make it, the Italians, man. They make great, great sweaters.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. It's a great way to have a little bit more balance in what it is that I do. You know, of course I have nylon in my clothing, nylon in my backpacks. Yeah. That's polyester fleece, of course. But for instance, this year, first time in 2024, this fall, we are introducing a high loft fleece like the jacket I'm wearing right now, you know, the Sherwin style, but it is going to be a hybrid. It is going to be partially polyester as well as natural wool.
Wow.
So it's going to be the same kind of high quality loft, the great feeling of it, but it's going to be a significant part of that fiber is going to be wool. And it's a great way to bring in natural materials that have the same, if not better performance, but it's more ecologically sound. It supports those industries, which are very important for the global economy. The sheep in Australia, the sheep in New Zealand, you know, most of it is milled in Thailand, where most of the processing takes place. Then it gets turned into yarns that can be milled in Italy or actually Germany. There's a lot of mills all over Europe that process the yarns from originally Australia and New Zealand, which gets turned into the bulk raw materials in Thailand, and it gets milled into yarns in other countries. But anyways, it's truly a global economy. And for anybody that thinks that, oh, I only want US made goods, or I only want German made goods, or I only want Japanese made goods, it's not possible.
It's a benefit. It's also, you know, it makes dependencies, but in the end, I hope it forces humanity to stick together and not to go apart. Perhaps it will work.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. It's you know, we're one planet, and we're a constituency. We're constituted of a bunch of wonderful global cultures. That is the human race, and we have our differences. And we have a lot of common ground at the same time. We should embrace the differences. Yes. How boring would it be just to have the same kind of food every day? You know, it's the cultures that allow you to enjoy all the wonderful flavors that we have, that the globe and the world has to offer. That's terrific. Variety is the spice of life, you know, and
it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the one great unifying event for humanity, I believe, will be the day when we have to go to war with an alien species.
and here we are, you know, and I see the thing. But yes, we will do this. Okay, to the end of the podcast, I just, you know, it's not really a quiz, but I think it makes everyone like a little bit more like, you know, it's just like, what is your favorite? And I give you some, you know, isn't that? And you just say from your stomach, what is your favorite? Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
So let's start easy. What is your favorite color?
Favorite color? Green.
Oh, nice. Infantry. Oh, Germany. Just to say, Germany, we have like the branch of arms. They have like colors, you know, like Bordeaux is like MBC. Orange is MPs. Nobody likes MPs. And green is infantry. So thank you for that. This is very good.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite artist?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many. One of my favorite art movements happens to be from your part of the world, East Germany, which is Bauhaus. I think the Bauhaus movement was fantastic. Yeah. So big fan of that.
My brother and my sister-in-law, they are architect, and I'm not a big artist guy, and they brought me to like Bauhaus, and I was so impressed because of the usability and the combination of beauty and usability, just great. Okay, this answers my question. What would be your ideal like architecture? Okay, so all right, we have this. Now back to something easy. What is your favorite camo?
My favorite camo?
Yes.
Oh man, gosh.
Do you like it at all or not at all?
I'm a big fan of camo. I am a big fan of camouflage. I think it's a fascinating study of military science.
Yeah.
You know, of course, the Germans really spearheaded camouflage development back in World War I. I mean, it's the science and the thinking behind it is fascinating. But my favorite camouflage for many reasons, not necessarily because it's as effective, because I think honestly, Scorpion or Multicam is probably one of the most effective camos in the world. However, my favorite camouflage is Swedish M90.
I would have betted that you say I would have betted that you say like the Danish one, but the M90 is just great. I just love it.
The Danish M84 is a close second.
Yeah. Okay. So, but very interesting. What is your favorite knife?
My favorite knife? I have many, but I would say
we all
one. It's the one I have in my pocket right now, and it's called the STS from Terrain 365, and it is a basically a modern folding shoot knife, and the shoot knife has great historical merit in terms of U.S. military history. It is my favorite folder. It's one I carry every day.
Yes, great. It's also said that you like to go shooting sometimes. So what is your favorite firearm?
Oh my gosh. It's again, I have so many.
Yeah, I'm sure. We make it easy. What is your favorite pistol or hand firearm?
My favorite pistol, just in regards to design, is the old school HKP7. And
Okay. Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I still
Walter
like the design.
Very nice.
Yeah.
The Walter
okay. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 Perfect. What is your favorite material to work with if you have to work it yourself? Oh, because you're thinking. Because, just to know where it comes from, me personally, I like to work with like leather, wood. I'm not a metal guy, so that's why I'm asking.
If it's working with the material myself with my hands, it's wood.
Yes.
Yeah, because I used to make furniture. I used to make furniture for many years. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. What is your favorite surplus item until now? Do you have something, I still have a fascination like going into surplus stores and like seeing things, even old things. I have like an old Polish haversack, and it's Romanian haversack from cotton, but it's great. Just, do you have something like this too? Do you think about it?
In terms of old military items, it doesn't have to be US, right? It can be anything from any place.
No. It can be from all over the world.
My favorite military surplus item is a Polish EOD multi-tool.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Really cool.
Be sure we will look for it. Cool. What are your favorite boots?
My favorite boots?
Are you shoe guy?
Yes, I'm a shoe guy. I'm a shoe guy. I guess what kind of guy am I not?
Yeah.
So
same here.
My favorite shoes right now, in terms of, I have, again, you can have sneakers, low tops, high tops, boots.
Of course.
So for boots, my favorite boots are from an Italian brand called Dieme, or D-I-E-M-M-E. Yeah. And they are an approach style boot, which is lightweight but ankle high, which is great for hiking for almost all conditions for me. It's a fantastic boot. All leather construction, very simple.
Yeah.
Laces at the toe, so you can adjust the fit very easily. A fantastic boot. Yeah.
Oh, you've posted it on Instagram, and I immediately want to search it because they look so great. It's all it's look, and they are. They are awesome. It's my sister-in-law comes from this area. She's Italian, so it's pretty close to her. Okay. So again, a question. I think it's hard to say, but what is your favorite movie? Is it the easy answer, or what would you say?
Easy.
If you have like a... Yeah.
La Jetée.
What?
La Jetée.
La Jetée. Oh, don't you have to tell me about it?
Okay, it is a science fiction film from the 60s, and it's made by an artist named Chris Marker, and it is such a great arty black and white science fiction movie.
Yeah,
and it's only about a half an hour long. And it is all a sequence of actually just photographic stills. So it's all stills, except for in the middle, there is just a few seconds of motion. And it's just so artistically and wonderfully filmed and placed.
Yes.
And it's just the epitome of sci-fi film noir cool. It is.
Wow. Okay,
so for in popular culture, the film 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt, that remember that movie? It is based on that. Yeah. It is based on that short, La Jete. Yeah. It is based on that short film.
La Jete. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Patrick, you've done it. We've done it. And I'm so happy that we met in this way. So thank you very much. Be sure you have always someone to call if you are here in Germany. I invite you to a so-called Fischbrötchen, a fish roll. You'll get here in Hamburg and you will enjoy it, believe me. And after that, we have a döner only on Thursday because it's döner's day. And Patrick, thank you very much for your time. It's just great talking with you. And I'm sure we could like chat for another hour, but you're busy. Geez. And I'm so happy that you took the time. And you said it quite right. We will unite. And be sure, I'm not scared if I have you on my flank when the aliens attack. Then
I will be
your rattle buddy. Be sure about this. So thank you. Thank you very much.
So, vielen Dank. And it was great speaking with you. It was wonderful having this this opportunity to speak with you on the podcast today, Eric. So,
yeah, thank you. And for you out there, just go out, be the outsider, use the stuff you buy, and don't let it just hang in the wardrobe or somewhere. Just go out, do stuff, and enjoy it. Thank you very much for being with us. See you next time. Bye.
All right. Tschüss.